We're on, we've got three papers that are associated with each other. They are all three under the title of Host Plant Resistance to Transplant Bug in Arkansas. I'll be presenting the first one, which I'll be talking about variation among genotypes that we've found in small plots. Dr. Studebaker will be following me, showing data confirming what we found in small plots and large plots. Then Dr. Teague will be following that with work on laboratory evaluation. We'll be summarizing, in some cases, more than 10 years of work, and that's reason 15 minutes, we're going to go pretty fast, or we're going to try to do that. Much of this work has been supported with Cotton Incorporated. I certainly want to acknowledge Pat O'Leary, then Ryan Kurtz, which is in our audience today, way in the back. So we do appreciate their support of this work and over the years. Okay, transplant bug is, as most of you know, is the number one insect pest in the United States. Since we've eradicated boll weevil, and we have BT that controls most of our worms, it is now the number one pest, and it's incredible to me how much we spray for it in the Mid-South, a great deal of insecticides going out for it. We as plant breeders over the years have primarily looked at morphological traits to find resistance to this pest. And the primary source of resistance is nectaries, or the nectarless trait. Nectaries normally occur on the midrib of the main vein and also at the bowl base or flower base. Entomological studies have indicated that transplant bugs are reduced in nectarless lines, and we agronomists have developed isolines, and they've shown that isolines yield as good as nectaried lines. But there are very few nectarless varieties that have ever been released. In fact, to my knowledge, only three commercial varieties. Stoneville 731N was the first one, lasted about a year. Then they replaced it with Stoneville 825. This was back in the 1980s. And 825 became a very popular variety. It was the number one variety in Arkansas for a number of years. But it was not because it was nectarless. It just was a good yielding variety. They oversprayed it because they had worms and weevils, so they really didn't take advantage of the nectarless trait. In just a few years ago, Deltapine released 0935, which came out of Jack Jones' program, is a nectarless variety. And I personally don't understand why it was not more fully utilized. And I think that's one of the real frustrations. We have a nectarless, we have a resistance trait that has not been taken advantage of. There's some other traits that help us with plant bugs. Pubescent leaves and stems will reduce plant bug injury. There's some old studies that indicate that this high glanding characteristic will reduce it a little bit, and early maturity will help perhaps with escape or preference. But the nectarless trait is the one that has been the most consistent. On the other side of the coin, susceptibility. Obviously, if hairy leaves gives you resistance, smooth leaves and smooth stems tend to make things a little more susceptible. Also, the okra leaf has been associated with some increased susceptibility to transplant bug. But in each of these cases, there, with these morphological traits, you find exceptions. There's some smooth leaf, smooth stem that have very good, relatively good resistance to transplant bug. The one trait that is universally and is always susceptible is Frigobrac. And Frigobrac 40 years ago was really a major component of our programs because it had shown some partial resistance to boll weevil, and that was a major concern. Phil Tugwell is a retired entomologist that I worked with for a number of years. I love this quote. He said the reason, the reason Frigobracs appear to resist boll weevils that after plant bugs got through with it, no self-respecting boll weevil would attack them. And that's somewhat maybe true, because this is what happens to that flower a lot of times after plant bugs have been there. It is highly susceptible to plant bugs. Our Frigobracs in our test normally we'll have about 90% dirty flowers, and I'll explain dirty flowers in a moment. Compared to the non-frigo, it's usually somewhere less than 50%. So it's a great variation. Dr. Tugwell and one of his students developed this square slicing technique to evaluate plant bug response to plant bugs. It was a somewhat intricate. You'd find a square that did not have worm or weevil damage. You had to slice it, peel the anthers out of there, then examine the anthers. We have modified that since we don't have to worry about boll weevils in our area, and we just simply looked at white flowers, and we examined the anthers in white flowers, and that's a lot easier than peeling those anthers out of the small square. Initially, we started off classifying flowers based on how much damage they had, either zero, less than 50, or over 50% anther damage, and we called this a percent anther damage index. Over several years, we found that and just simply percent dirty flowers, or that whether they presence or absence of any damage, had a very high correlation. So now we just simply look at flowers and do not make any discrimination in terms of how much anther damage is there. Our methods we used in our small plots is we plant a highly susceptible check, that's our frigo brack, in full row strips. We'll plant them in leaving 8 to 12 rows between the strips. We like to be close to corn. That ensures that we're going to have some plant bugs coming to us. About 3 or 4 weeks after we plant the susceptible strips, we'll come in and plant small plots. These have been 1 or 2 row plots in 8 to 12 rows, depending on how many replications we're going to have. And we always include a susceptible check in the frigo brack in each check. No insecticides applied for Turner's plant bug. Then when we start seeing plant bug injury on our checks on the frigo, then we'll start looking for this percent dirty flowers. We examine up to about 6 flowers per day for 5 to 8 days and record simply the number that are dirty or that are damaged, and then get one calculation over those sampling dates. Here's just a view of some of our tests. Here's the 4 rows of frigo. I'm not sure which year this was, but this is a typical what it looks like at the end. Very often we get these bug whips. That's a result of plant bugs early in the season. Now, in 2003 through 5, we used 2-row plots, 20 foot long, with 6 replications. From 6 through 12, we dropped that to a 1-row plot, but we went to 12 replications, same amount of area, but it just facilitated doing this. These replications are planted down vertically down the row so that every plot is an equal distance from the strips of frigo, the 4-row strips. In 2013, we stayed with the 1-row plot and reduced the number of reps from 12 to 8 just to reduce a little bit of the work. And here's this is the number of entries. In 2003, we evaluated 22 entries in one test. And you can see over the 11 years, we've evaluated in my strains test 482 entries in 23 tests, the variety test 481 in 16 tests, regional tests, which include the regional high quality, regional RBTN, as well as some other miscellaneous tests that are associated with regional breeders, 480 in 19. So a total of 1,473 entries in 59 tests. Now, that's not 1,473 different entries. That includes the checks, as well as a lot of lines are tested multiple years. I estimate it's probably 500 or 600 different genotypes that we have evaluated. So for a total number of plots of 17,016, if you multiply that by 30 or 40 flowers per plot, we've looked at almost around a half a million flowers. That's a lot of flowers. And I'm not going to show you all those data. That will make you feel good. But here are the data from the strains test as well as the RBTN test over years for our frigo check, as well as the Sugar 105, which I consider as a more susceptible check, and the DP393, which is a more resistant check. One thing you notice is that in each of these tests over years, the variation between Sugar, the red line and the blue line, Sugar 105 and Delta Pine 393, are somewhat similar. And that gives me a great deal of confidence. The only real problem was there in 2012 in this one test. And somebody messed up. I don't know what happened. That surely is not right, but that's what the data said. So some very consistency. You see the Frigo BRAC is always very high. There is some noise there. So I've tried in the next two slides to try to normalize these data. Initially, I normalized it by Frigo. And so if you will, kind of watch the red and blue lines and see what happens to them as we go. They kind of smooth out a little bit. We've normalized it to Frigo here, so it's up here at the very top, is 100, made it 100. The problem with that is these last couple of years that we had very high dirty flowers on both of the checks. So Frigo pretty much opts out. It just goes, it limits out. There's a scale effect. So the next thing I did is tried to scale it on based upon Delta Pine 393. And here you see that, on this, watch that red line. What happens to the red line, it smooths out a bunch. So I think this is some opportunity. I haven't explored this to as far as I want to, but I think this Delta Pine 393 may be a very good way to normalize and evaluate over years. However, the differences between years is a real issue when you're trying to evaluate different lines. Now, here's the strains. And each year I've evaluated what I call new strains test, then advanced strains test. And basically, in my program, materials, each year new materials come into the new strains test. The best of those will go into the advanced strains test the next year. And you can see over those years that in these tests, 57% of the lines have been, of the new strains have been equal to or better than Delta Pine 393. 26 have been greater than Sure Grow, the susceptible. In the advanced strains test, it's a little bit higher. So that means I'm doing some good. Well, I am using Torrance Plant Bug as one of the selection criteria. So there is some advance, but there's relatively few that are really better than Delta Pine 393, which tells us it's a pretty good resistant, not totally resistant, but it has some resistance that provides us a good check there. Now, in terms of my released varieties, I use these data from these tests very important when I start releasing germplasm lines. In 2005-2008, had Phytogen 355 instead of Delta Pine 393, and Phytogen 355 is about as same resistance as Delta Pine 393. Out of the all 24 lines were more resistant than Frigo, which if you want to have Torrance Plant Bug resistance, just compare it to Frigo, and you've got resistance as long as it's not Frigo. That's the secret. But of those 24 lines, two were more more resistant than 355. 16 were equal. 6 were more susceptible, and all of them were equal to or better than Sure Grow 125. Of the lines released from 09 through 13, again, all of them, 19 of them were more resistant than the Frigo. Only one was more resistant than 393. 5 equal. And again, most of them were more resistant than Sure Grow 105. So these are all where they're compared in the same years with the check. So it's a equal to equal type of evaluation. So this is very to me. This test really helps me as I release things. Now, we've done variety tests over the years, and I've just pulled out a couple of ones to show you. In 2010, this is last year, I had a Nectarless variety in the variety test. And guess where it is? It's right at the top. And here I've put these as percent of Frigo, and that's not really hard, but it shows you the right direction we're going in terms of normalizing the data. It's interesting, the second one Stonewall 5288. Now, if you know the pubescence on 5288, it's the hairiest thing out there. In fact, you can pick it out of every variety test. So, if you remember, nectarless and hairiness are resistant. Well, we proved that. It was published before. Look what's on bottom. Let's not talk about that. UA 48 has some susceptibility to plant bugs. Now, here's a more recent in 2012. Again, Stonewall 5288 is very, very hairy. Now, there's a UA 222 is right up there with it. So I don't just breed susceptible ones. So there are some resistance there. I've highlighted those two as well as these two here, susceptible ones, phytogen 375 and UA 48. Glenn has used those four in a large plot test, and he'll be talking about that in the next talk. The last thing I'm going to talk about is 2013. Now, I'm not a superstitious person, but 2013 was very unfortunate. Everything I did was wrong. Because of rains that we had, we did not get this planted until June 14th. That's kind of like some stuff up on the high plains, wasn't it? We had historical high Tarns plant bug population. I think Glenn's going to talk about that. Plant development was slowed by the weather conditions. At a Kaiser, out of 14 days at the 1st of August, we had measurable rainfall 12 to 14 days. Guess what the clouds did? Cloudy weather. We just simply did not get plant development. And these here is what this test looked like. No, these haven't been stripped. This is what it looked. This is the cotton at the end of the year. Over here on the right is what we normally would find. This is kind of where we let plant bugs go. Here's our Frigo, and there's a new strains test, and there was hardly anything there at the end of the year. We went in and did percent dirty flowers. Unfortunately, there was hardly any flowers. So as we tried some other measurements at the end, after we got through after defoliation, bows per foot and percent open bows, and you see the R squares, they were all over the place. That's the only thing that showed anything is that we instead of counting up to six flowers, we counted as many flowers were there. You see there is some good differences in number of flowers, and two of these more resistant ones were at the top, two of the more susceptible ones at the bottom. In between, they're pretty scrambled. So that's just the best we could do in 2013. The final thing, again, from 2013, was really a curiosity, really, in both the RBTN and in my advanced strains test. I had one line, and that's a nectarless line, but it had far and away more flowers than in this test than anything else in either of the tests. You know, it's significantly different from, easily different from any of the others. What does that mean? I'm not really sure, but it is something that we want to follow up on. So, in conclusions, our methods for evaluating response to cotton genotypes in these small plots have worked effectively in 10 of 11 years. 2013, our method, we got overwhelmed by, I learned that Tarns plant bugs can take every fruiting form there is on the plant off, and when you do that, you don't get very many dirty flowers. Using these, we've been able to establish genetic variation response to Tarns plant bug. The nectarless and the dense pubescence morphological traits confer some degree of Tarns plant bug, but there's similar levels have been found in nectaried and glabrous types. And the important part of this is that suggests there's possible different mechanisms of resistance. And that's what I combined in that one there with all the flowers. Maybe. I know. I will see. Lessons from 2013. Don't plant a test in 2013. Otherwise, where you have these very high populations, they can eliminate flowers. And if you're planting very late, monitor the populations. And you may have to spray a little bit in order to get some type of evaluation. Any questions?